You're listening to the Work Happy Coaching Podcast with me, Jo Casey, helping you to create an ethical coaching practice that's also a sustainable business. Get seen, get heard, take up space in the world and get your message out there. Hey, this is Jo Casey. Welcome to the Work Happy Coaching Podcast. Are you sick of all of the I made six figures in 22 minutes, or follow my blueprint, how I signed high-class, high-paying clients in only 3 months. I do this thing where I click hide on every Facebook ad that comes up. I go through periods of it, particularly the ones that are selling me kind of things for coaches. But I think for some reason, every time Facebook changes its algorithm, a new swath of them kind of comes in. So this past week or so, my Facebook feed has been filled with them. And it gets kind of depressing because it's really difficult to look at those ads and not feel like you're failing. If you're not making, you know, $100,000 launches and things like that, and even though I know the background behind a lot of those stories, and I think it does bad things to our heads, or we do bad things to our heads with that information, rather. One of the things that goes on with this kind of weird online space that we have is that we get a very selected view of what is happening. It's like watching commercials on TV. And now that I have, you know, whether you've got like TiVo or Sky Plus or you just watch Netflix, we watch them so little. But think back to those days when, you know, you'd be in the middle of watching The Sopranos and then you'd have to pause and watch 7 minutes of commercials or whatever it was. And they'd all be these ridiculously happy families driving shiny cars and coming out of their immensely clean kitchen with their totally well-behaved kids. And we know that things like that isn't real life. And that's one of the things with the online world as well. Those six-figure launches, the high-end clients, they're not telling the full story. And I think that leaves a lot of us feeling pretty crappy about ourselves. So I thought it might be useful and fun to talk about the other side of it, the key skill, the key thing that you have to get comfortable with, and that is failure. And I don't know about you, but I used to hate the idea of failure. I'm not going to lie, I still don't love it. Failure hurts. Failure makes me feel crappy. But I also know that failure is a sign that I'm trying stuff. And if I'm trying stuff in my business, then that's what's going to lead to growth. And that's also what's going to lead to failure. And they're not, a failure isn't an absolute. It's only an absolute if you use that as your stop point. And this has come up again and again because one of the areas I deal with a lot with clients is perfectionism. And I'm a recovering perfectionist myself. I am, I am prone to procrastination. I want to get things out perfectly. I want it to be right. I want it to work first time. And so I can spend way too long sometimes planning and titivating and holding back until something is absolutely ready. And, you know, quite often I'll still need to fight that urge to kind of just make it as perfect as I possibly can be rather than putting it out imperfectly. And as Liz Gilbert says, done is better than perfect every time. And I try and use that as one of my mantras, and I try and share that with my clients. But I notice that those of us who do err on the side of perfectionism, we are afraid of putting the thing out and it not working or it being found wanting in some way. And yet, I know, as sure as I know anything, that the only way you are going to grow, the only way you're going to get clients, the only way you're going to bring in income, the only way you're going to be doing great, amazing, life-changing work in the world is to take risks, to put things out before they're 100% perfect, and to fail. And so I think it's something that we need to be talking about more. And I'm going to be talking about a little bit about Brené Brown's work. But I want to share with you a couple of stories about failure and how I have responded to it and reacted to it. And maybe there's some lessons there for you. So I did my first coach training back in 2001, and my son was only a few months old at the time. So it's quite a big deal for me to go away and go on this this weekend training course. And I came back and was really enthused about it. And so did everything that they'd recommended to build my business. And I quit my job, which was a terrible idea at the time because I had no idea how to run a business. But I did it and I secured my first few clients. And they talk you through some kind of scenarios that thing, you know, difficult clients. And there were things like, well, a client isn't progressing with their actions, or actually, I think that was about it. I can't think of it. Yeah, there certainly wasn't a much kind of in-depth in terms of tools. But even on the more advanced courses that I've done since, and, you know, I went on years later to do a master's in coaching, and I'm an NLP master practitioner, and I've done training in mindfulness and some courses in things like CBT and transactional analysis and all of those things. They still did not prepare me for one of my first paying client sessions. So I'd set everything up. I had my contract. I had explained what coaching was, and there was a guy, he was in his mid-20s, and he worked for an estate management company, so they, like real estate, and he thought he was a bit of a player. He had quite a nice car, and he liked, you know, to eat out, and he was, you know, I'd met him through a BNI group that I was part of. And if you don't know what BNI Group is, it's Business Networking International. And to be honest, in hindsight, it wasn't a great place to be trying to get coaching clients, because it was, you know, this guy is in real estate. There was a plumber there. There was somebody who did telephone systems, somebody who did air conditioning systems, someone who did event planning. It really wasn't the type of kind of connections that were good to have as a coach, but I was enthusiastic. I was gung-ho about it. So I'd managed to land this client, and he was paying me the grand total of, I think, £35 for, I think, four sessions. So it was like less than £10 a session he was paying. It was great. I'd sent him the contract. I talked him through what it was. He wanted some help, how he could improve his performance at work and close more deals and all of that stuff. And we'd had the first session. It had gone fine, all by the telephone. In the days when you had to get an actual phone and have a little headset with it. And so we did that. And then the second call came around. And I was there, and I was ready, and I was prepared, and I was connected to the call. And there's loads of background noise as I'm talking to him. And I'm thinking, where is he? And it occurs to me that he's in his car, and he's on his hands-free kit in his car. So I you know, he's in this torrent of words just coming out of me. He's in real flow, and you know, I'm a new coach, so I'm not that confident kind of interrupting somebody and just saying, I'm just going to pause you there. So I'd let him kind of keep talking, and I'm thinking, why is he in his car? And then I start thinking, why is he talking so fast? Because it was really coming out a mile a minute. And also, he was kind of a bit all over the place in terms of what he was talking about. I was struggling to understand even what point is he getting to? Does he have a point? Is he going to get to a point? And he's telling me about his week, and he's talking about all the challenges he's got on, but he's going to crush it. He's going to be brilliant. I'm totally freaking out at the other end of this phone with my little headset on, and thinking, how can I pause him and just say, what's going on? Or what do I say as a coach? This isn't in the manual. This isn't in any of my training materials. And eventually, what must have been about, I don't know, what felt like an hour, but it was probably about 5 or 10 minutes, he kind of paused. He'd go, so you hear me? And I'm thinking, I have no idea what he's talking about. And so I stall for a minute and kind of go, right, so what would you like your goal to be for this session? Because that was what they told us to do in training, right? We're using this thing called the grow model, and you get the client's goal first of all, and then you get into the reality, and then you go through options, and then you kind of get a commitment about what they will do. That's the W. So I go, so what would you like the goal to be for our session today? And he goes off on this other stream of consciousness kind of ramble about the different things that he's got going on in his life. And by this time, I am totally beside myself. I do not know what to do, because I can't hear anything that sounds like a goal coming out of this guy's mouth. I can't even hear that much that sounds like there's a through train of thought going on it. And then he's sniffing quite a lot. He's talking a lot. He's sniffing quite a lot. He's in his car. And I don't know what to say. And he kind of goes, God, sorry about that. I kind of should have probably blown my nose. Don't want to blow my nose, though, do I? And by this point, I'm just, you know, practically in a fetal position, just rocking with my little head song. What do I do? What do I do? And finally, he must have stopped a traffic light or something, because it said, you know, the noise of the whooshing traffic slows down a little bit and calms down. And he says, oh, sorry, it's such a hectic week. And, you know, I had to just have a little bit of help to get through the week. And there's an awkward little laugh, and I kind of a little help. And he went, oh, you know, just a bit of Charlie, just everyone does it, don't they, on those weeks where you just need that bit more energy. And I'm thinking, does that mean what I think it means? And this guy is telling me that he's done some cocaine. He's calling me from his car phone. And I'm trying to have a coaching session with him. And I don't know where this voice came from, but sometimes my kind of inner wise person kind of just kicks in and takes over and grabs the keys to the car and just goes, yeah, okay, Joe, you go, carry on with your rocking. I'm going to take over. And this voice came out of me and just said, okay, well, I don't think it's appropriate that we carry on the session right now, especially not with you driving and with you having taken I can't remember what I said. So I'm going to suggest that we reschedule. It's really important that you can be focused and clear of mind for our sessions. So when would be a good time to rearrange? You're really like watching yourself do something. And so we rescheduled the session. And afterwards, I cried for the entire afternoon, or what felt like the entire afternoon, because all I could think of was, how didn't I know? How didn't I spot that? Why didn't they tell me this is the type of thing that happens? But nobody's ever going to tell you those types of things are going to happen. And I don't want to worry you. I don't want to frighten you, because this has happened to me once in my career, and this is like 17 years on. I now have things in my contract about, you know, make sure that you're able to make the calls, and it's up to you to clear space for you to call me. I go through behavioral contracting with people at the beginning about what's a good thing to do. I don't actually explicitly say please don't have done drugs or alcohol, but I do say, you know, make sure that you're in a good frame of mind and you're able to not be interrupted and to be focused on our session. But at the time, it felt like such a huge failure. I was racking my brain to think, what had I done wrong? What should I have done differently? And it really knocked my confidence, because I just kept thinking, why hadn't I anticipated that? And the truth is, sometimes stuff just happens. You're never going to anticipate it. I have never had that happen to me since, thankfully. We did not carry on with our coaching relationship after those four sessions. He literally moved to Australia. He literally decided, as a result of the coaching, that he was going to follow his dream, which is great, right? That's one of the things you want. But that he'd been offered a job in Australia, and he was going to take it, and it was great. And again, I was devastated, because I was just like, oh my God, I have coached him so well. Here's me thinking that I'm going to have this long-term client relationship, paying me this grand total of £35 a month. And he moves to Australia. So my first paying client literally moves to the other side of the world. And I can laugh about it now, but that type of experience really knocked my very fragile, at the time, confidence And it stopped me from doing a lot of the things that I really should have been doing. It stopped me from marketing myself quite so much. It stopped me from putting myself out there quite so much. And so it became this vicious circle. And I think this is one of the things that can happen with perceived failure. The story I told myself about that guy was the fact that I wasn't a good enough coach. I didn't know enough. I couldn't really help people. And that then kind of squirreled its way into my brain and started affecting my behavior. I held myself back more. If somebody asked what it is that I did, I kind of wasn't as confident when I told them. It all kind of soaked in and started affecting things not for the better. And that then became this almost like the start of this snowball that fed into me not getting as many clients as I needed to, that, you know, reiterated all of the fears and the negative self-talk that I had about, you know, I wasn't a proper business person. And it resulted in me eventually having to quit my business because I was in debt and I wasn't making enough money. And then the F word came around and just like had a big failure stamp marked across the box that I put my dreams and my hopes and my coaching business in. And so that story that you tell yourself about what failure means is really, really important. When we're in that kind of dark place, it's really hard to get your brain working, especially if you then pile a load of stress onto it as well. And we don't make great decisions from that place. So let's fast forward a little bit. I've restarted my coaching business. It's going okay. And I decide that I'm going to start a podcast. And I line up my first half dozen guests and I record them. At least I think I've recorded them. And I realise that I've not got the setup done properly and the recordings are just awful, dreadful, just like on the line. It's really, really horrible. And these are professional business owners that I've invited onto my podcast to talk to me about, you know, businessy things. And it felt like some huge failure again. And the story I told myself about that was, I can't do this. They are proper business people. I always screw things up. I am not the type of person who can run a business successfully. Fortunately, by that point, we were much further along in my own kind of personal growth journey. And I, by this point, done quite a few years of NLP training. By this point, I'm an NLP master practitioner. And so I know this phrase that has become my kind of my touchstone, this phrase that I wish I could go back in time and give to my 7-year-old self to carry through for the rest of the world. This phrase that I keep trying to give my kids, and I hope it's doing its job and it's soaking in. And that phrase is, there is no failure, only feedback. And it's the idea that, you know, okay, so when things go wrong, it's not failure. It's not failure as in this hard, immovable, obstinate, definite, permanent thing. It's just feedback. It's just information. So in this situation with my podcast guest, the information I had was, I couldn't use those recordings. I needed to change my setup and make sure that everything was recording okay. I needed to test things and build in a kind of a test sequence so that I knew going forwards and I could avoid that mistake again. And I also knew that the worst thing that would happen is if I asked those people if they would mind re-recording it and explain the situation, the worst that would happen is they would say no. Now, the hysterical part of my brain is going, no, the worst that could happen is they could tell everybody how incompetent you are and never to go on your show again. But I knew that wasn't very likely. And so I went back to them and every single one of them said yes, because they were lovely. So a lot of what I work with my clients around is, like I say, this getting over perfectionism and getting over this idea of failure. Because failure is a sign that you're trying things. And if you're not trying things, then you're not going to grow. And there's a lot of mythology around in the online world. There's a lot of sharing just the shiny, not sharing the reality. And that can really do a number on us. So I'm really passionate about sharing some more of the realistic side of things. And there's so many of the stories that I carried around just with kind of shame sticking to them, like, I don't know, like toffee on a hot day or something, that I've managed to work through and release the more information I've had around what other people's journeys are. And so that's why I think it's really important that we share this stuff. And I remember feeling really, really low after trying to launch my first group program. What's the worst thing about nobody buying your group program? I know if you're thinking, oh, there isn't a worse thing. There's nothing worse than that. I'll tell you what's worse. Having just two people buy the group program. Because if nobody buys it, you can pretend it didn't happen. You don't have to go back and tell anybody. But if two people have paid you, you then have to go back to them and say, this didn't work out. And I can't run this program that you've paid for. Here is your money back, or suggest something else. And so that's what happened. And I had to go back to these two people who were both lovely. And I said, here's the thing. Instead of it being a group program, how would you like to work with me one-on-one for the same price? Because it was a lot lower price. The group program had been my one-on-one, and they both jumped at it and both became long-term clients. And it was really good. But that sense of shame and embarrassment at first was just like, ugh. And I still wasn't one of those stories I wanted to share with people. And then I was invited to teach a class with Andrea Owen from Your Kick-Ass Life. And I was like, oh my God, me? Really? But we connected a few times. I'd had her on my podcast. And we'd been chatting and we got on really well. And she said, I teach this class every year. I don't want to teach it on my own. Do you fancy doing it with me? And I was like, yeah. And I learned loads from her. I learned absolutely loads about how, you know, proper business people do it. And guess what? It's not that much different from how the rest of us do it. Maybe it's a bit more organized. And Andrea at the time, you know, had help. I mean, she still does have help. She has a VA and an online business manager. And I didn't at the time. But I learned lots. It was really good fun. And she told me the story of her first group program, which guess what? Nobody bought. And I can't tell you the relief I felt when I heard that. Because here was this person who was making, you know, way more money than me, who seemed to have it so much more together, who had an online business manager and a VA and, you know, hundreds of thousands of likes on her Facebook page and a best-selling book. And she had been through the same experience I'd been through. And it's one of those questions that I love talking to established people about now. You know, tell me about your failures. Tell me about the things that went wrong. Tell me about the pivots you had to make, because they're all there. But most of us aren't sharing those things because they're embarrassing and we feel bad about them. But it's feeding into this mirage of perfection that we have in our world. And you are never going to attain perfection because it's impossible. You can't. And so what you need to do is get away from this idea that failure is disaster, because it's not. Failure is a necessary step in the journey. Many failures are many necessary steps in the journey. I launched a group program with Holly Wharton, my colleague, who I do this the monthly podcast episode with, and we launched this group program. We thought it was great. It was a really great design, and nobody bought it. And it sucked. And it was like, oh my God, what went wrong? And, you know, we really had to unpack it as to why that hadn't happened. It hurt. You know, I've got a friend who's writing a book. She's already written one really successful book. She had to put off her the submission date when you have to go in twice just because things went wrong and she felt like a really crappy failure. And it's like you have a choice at that point. When the thing goes wrong, when it doesn't work, when you mess up, when you make the mistake, you can either say, oh my God, I'm such a terrible failure. This means whatever horrible thing you're thinking about yourself. Or you think, okay, how
do I pick myself up from this?
So here are some questions to help you get to the how. And first of all, before you even get to that point, what I want to say is it's okay to feel crappy when this happens. I am not a fan at all of the whole kind of, you just have to think positive all the time. We're human beings. We're not robots. We don't have a switch. It's a process, and you know, we need to be aware of that, and you need to allow yourself to feel crappy sometimes. That's okay. So allow yourself some time for doing that. Maybe it's an hour. Maybe go off and have some ice cream, or just go lay down and have a good cry. That always helps me. Or talk to somebody. And then help yourself to get to a position where you can start to get things in a bit of perspective. So a good question to ask yourself is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how bad is this really? How important will this be in 6 days' time, 6 weeks' time, 6 months' time, 6 years' time? How am I responding right now? What is the story that I'm telling myself? Is that story helping? Is that story true? What can I do to improve the situation? And what can I learn from it? What is the feedback? What's the lesson I can take forward, or the lessons? And be careful with these, because sometimes that inner critic will give you lessons like, well, the lesson is you're not cut out for this. So no, from that kind of wise, loving place for yourself, what is the lesson that you can take from it? What can you do differently? If the situation happened again, what would you do differently? So you can imagine yourself taking that into the future. And then one which is sometimes a little bit tricky, but what's the silver lining of this? What positives can I take from it? Sometimes my biggest mistakes have resulted in the biggest learnings. And sometimes the learning is I am more resilient than I give myself credit for, because I can have this happen and I can pick myself up and I can carry on. Sometimes there may be more specific flashes of insight, like I've discovered that actually that person is a cow and I'm never going to talk to them again. So what is the lesson? What is the silver lining? What is the kind of the realizations that you'll take forwards? And that may involve rewriting a long-held story you've been telling about yourself. You know, the failures are great learning opportunities. And yes, you're allowed to say, brilliant, another effing growth opportunity. You're allowed to say it through gritted teeth if you want. We don't always have to enjoy it. But we have to get okay with it. Because the alternative is to just not engage with the world, to not put ourselves out there, to not take some risks, to not do anything differently, to not make the ask, to not create the thing and then say, here it is, to not put your new offer out there, even though it feels like you're stark naked on the internet. The alternative is just to hide and to stay small and to not follow your dreams and to not do the things that are going to change the world. And that isn't a life. And we need people out there taking more risks from a place of love, from a place of wanting to do good in the world. And yes, from getting paid to do that as well. I hope this has been helpful. I'm not saying you have to like failure. I'm just saying get okay with it. I don't like failing. I hate it. I'm a tightly wound woman and I like things to be perfect, damn it. But that's not reality. That's not how the world works. And so this is my personal messy, imperfect process that I go through, and I'm inviting you to give it a go too. But more than that, I'm inviting you to take some more risks, to put yourself out there, to feel exposed, to push your comfort zone, to tell people about what it is that you do, to tell people your big vision for them, to share your gifts with the world. And yes,
It may mean that they get rejected. It may mean that you fall flat on your face. It may mean that you stumble and it's not nearly as perfect and pristine an outcome as you would like. But it's the only way to travel. Otherwise, you're just standing still. That's all for me today. I will speak to you soon. Thank you so much for listening. Take care. Bye-bye. You've been listening to the Work Happy Coaching Podcast with me, Jo Casey. For more information, help, tools and advice, go to jocasey.com and you can download my 12 ethical ways to get coaching clients.